Welcome to Gospel Tangents, the best source for Mormon history, science, and theology. I'm Rick Bennett. In our final conversation with Sandra Tanner, we'll talk about the trial. What did Sandra Tanner think about that? Should he have gotten a plea bargain? So Sandra has a lot of interesting insights, and I think you'll really enjoy this conversation. Well, let me just ask you, just as we get ready to finish here, do you have any last comments on Mark Hoffman or any other stories that we may have missed already?
I thought it was a very curious ending to the whole thing when the prosecutors negotiated a settlement with Mark rather than having the thing go to trial. Now, the question was, if they took it to trial, how many trials would there be? Because the prosecuting attorney said that if they would have gone forward, there would have been a trial on the documents, but they couldn't prove a connection from the documents to the motive for the murder. And that if they had to do the murder separate, that they were afraid they'd lose because they wouldn't be able to prove a connection up for the motive to the forgery of the documents. And I talked with Stott, the prosecuting attorney, okay, about this afterwards one day. I don't remember, I ran into him at some kind of history thing. And he asked me what I thought would have been their chances of a conviction if that had gone forward. And I said, well, I'd have gone forward because, yeah, I think you could have nailed the guy on every count, you know. But they, because they were convinced that there would have to be a division of the trials on the different forgeries and the murderer, that it would be hard to get the death sentence. And if you're not going to get the death sentence, then isn't it better to negotiate a settlement where he has to fess up to everything and get that cleared off the table and give him life? Well, he wasn't actually given life. It was, 15 to life or whatever?
I think it was 5 to life.
To life. Yeah. Of course, then Mark gets in prison and he makes some stupid move to try to hire a hitman to kill the parole board. I mean, hello, that just sealed your fate. You're never getting out of here, buddy. You know, it was just crazy. I don't know why he would have done that. But anyways,
he'd been getting away with stuff for a long time. I guess he thought he'd get away with that too.
Right. I went to the whole preliminary hearing for the month-long sessions, and it was fascinating to hear. It was fascinating to hear how they had pulled all the evidence together on the case. I ended up feeling that they didn't want to really go forward with a trial because Stott was a devout Mormon, and he would know that it's not kosher to put all the general authorities on the stand in a court case. And several of them would have been called. Hinckley had personally done business with Hoffman. You had, who was the other guy that did the loan?
Hugh Pinnock.
Pinnock. And I don't remember who else met with Hoffman. So you have these different men that would have had to have been put on the stand. Well, I think a good Mormon would know that wouldn't be a good career move to be the one that subpoenaed the church leaders. And the question would come up then, do you subpoena church finances? If you're going to deal with who paid who for what, does this get into revealing church finances? Which would have been a big problem for the church. I mean, they never let any information out about their finances. It would all come out about this loan of Pinnock's that would have, who knows what rabbit trails that could have gone down. So I think that intuitively a good Mormon would have known we better figure out a way to get this thing cleared off the table before we do any more damage to the reputation of the church. So I was disappointed they didn't go forward with the trial.
And I think a lot of people were disappointed with that. Now, couple interviews, maybe I'll hopefully pique your interest here. So Shannon Flynn, I'm going to be releasing that next week. He's actually talks a lot about that loan with Hugh Pinnock. And he, so there'll be some interesting things coming out there. Also, George Throckmorton, I've interviewed him as well. Interesting to hear his police side of it. I do remember in the book Salamander, that the Stott that you referenced, he had a reputation even before that trial of settling cases. He, and in talking with George Throckmorton, there was because I want to say Cannon was the district attorney or something like that. He was going to prosecute it, and then he got out of the case, and I don't remember if Stott took over or whatever. But there was some. I believe it was in the county attorney's office. There was some turnover there, and the person who replaced Cannon, I can't remember his name, said something to the effect of, "Look, we're spending way too much money, because it takes a lot of money to figure out if something's a forgery. We're going to cut the budget." I know George Throckmorton knew he was losing his job, which was going to cut the case. So there were some other things going on. I don't think it's fair to say. I mean. Not that I disagree. I'm sure that Stott didn't want to call President Hinckley to the stand. I'm not disagreeing with that. But there were a lot of factors, and I don't think it's fair to say, well, you know, he's a Mormon, and he wanted to avoid publicity. Sure, that's true. But there, you know, there's a spending
there
a lot of money.
Other reasons
yeah,
too.
There's a lot
yes.
of a lot of other issues going on there. So,
right.
So I think those are important to consider as well.
Yes.
So, and hopefully those will help you all listen to those interviews. They're fascinating interviews. So anyway, was there any other things on Hoffman that you
wanted
to
mention? Well, it's curious that he's never talked to anyone and granted interviews on it. But if you get the reputation of being the world's greatest forger, anything you say or do after that may diminish your status. So I could see why he wouldn't want to. Once you make it to the top, you quit talking. So I think that he has selfish reasons for not wanting to ever grant an interview of taking away. What else has he done in his life? His only claim to fame is to be the greatest forger. So if he doesn't talk, they can't analyze it anymore and take away from that.
Well, and George Throckmorton said, no, the greatest forger was never caught.
That's true.
So very interesting. All right. Well, thank you, Sandra Tanner. Okay. I really appreciate you taking some time and your reflections on Mark Hoffman. And thanks for interviewing with Gospel Tangents.
Thank you. Mm-hmm.
I hope you enjoyed our conversation with Sandra Tanner. Sandra, I'd like to thank you for helping us out and telling your perspective on Mark Hoffman. It was very interesting. I'd also like to encourage everyone to go out and purchase a transcript. Go to gospeltangents.com/shop and you can get a copy of this transcript for just $10 a month. Or you can buy it individually if you just want to buy this one. I also want to point out we've got our other interviews with Kurt Bench, Shannon Flynn, and George Throckmorton. Those are available on our Amazon webpage if you'd like a paperback like we've got here. So to go to our Amazon page, just do a search for Gospel Tangents, and you should be able to find it very quickly. So thanks again for your support, and I really appreciate it. Your help helps us to create better resources for Mormon history, science, and theology. I'd also like to introduce Michael Quinn in our next conversation. Michael is a well-known LDS scholar, and in his latest book, Wealth and Corporate Power, we talk about the Deseret Hemp Company. Yes, I said hemp. So that'll be interesting to talk about as we have here in Utah an upcoming legalization on marijuana. So what does Michael have to say about the Deseret Hemp Company?
Brigham Young, as church president, and for a period of time as governor, established a lot of missions with an economic basis. So there was a flax mission, there was a cotton mission, which of course also caused the textile industry in Utah to grow. And then there was a hemp growing process, although it wasn't exactly a hemp mission, but there were general authorities who were involved in the growing of hemp and its use in manufacturing shirts and trousers. And so that was similar. It was a similar kind of enterprise to the cotton mission that Brigham Young had established in southern Utah. But that lasted longer and it was more successful. And as far as I know, I have no evidence of anyone smoking any of the hemp.
That's what I was worried about.
No.
Okay. I hope you enjoyed that short clip from our next interview. If you'd like to hear the entire interview uncut, please go to our patreon.com/gospeltangents and subscribe for just $5 a month. If you'd like a transcript of this, please click the yellow subscribe button at gospeltangents.com, and I'll send you this and all future transcripts. Also, if you'd like a paperback like we've got here, those are available at our website at amazon.com. Just do a search for Gospel Tangents. Please get all updates at our Facebook page at facebook.com/gospeltangents. We're also on Twitter at Gospel Tangents. You can also get transcripts individually at our website, gospeltangents.com/shop. Finally, make sure that you subscribe on our Apple Podcast page. Just do a quick search for Gospel Tangents there and give us a 5-star review while you're at it. Thanks again for listening. Your support helps create more Mormon history classes and podcasts such as this, and so I really appreciate you listening. Please share with your friends. Click here to subscribe, here for a transcript, and over here you'll see some more of our great videos. Thanks again.